Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's do some basics because I think a lot of people have heard of Los Alamos National Lab, but I'm not sure if everyone understands really what your mission is. So give us some basics. What do you do at that lab?
Los Alamos National Laboratory is a national security sciences laboratory. It got its genesis back in the Manhattan Project in World War II, building the very first nuclear weapons. Since then, we've evolved a great deal. We're a multidisciplinary research institution. We do strategic science on behalf of national security. We're operated by Los Alamos National Security. It's an LLC where we have Bechtel, University of California, Babcock, Wilcox, and URS. And we operate this for the Department of Energy National Nuclear Security Administration.
Works for me because it explains exactly what you guys do, which is always helpful. Now, you guys are considered a government-owned contractor-operated, so a GOCO?
Correct.
Or
we're GOCO.
Okay, which means, give us a sense of what that exactly means.
There's a civilian management team here that runs the laboratory. We're primarily government-funded, primarily through the Department of Energy and NNSA. They get to decide and define the strategy and the what needs to be accomplished. The laboratory gets to determine the best method to get there, the actual, you know, how we get it done.
Sounds to me like the perfect performance-based contract.
Well, that is what the recent revolution has been, so that we actually have a contract with performance incentives, and for the LLC to, you know, recoup its rewards, we have to actually deliver as promised.
Very interesting. Now, you guys are one of many labs. I think there's something like 14 or 16 Energy Department research labs. Where do you fit in with those other labs?
We are a little different. You know, we are part of NNSA, part of the Nuclear Weapons Complex. LANL fills a pretty unique role because we're both a designer of nuclear weapons and a steward of the nation's strategic stockpile. But we also do a great deal. We leverage our expertise in the basic sciences, experimental facilities, to address a broad spectrum of research. One of the things a lot of people don't know, we have over 30 user facilities here. We have a linear accelerator. We have a Center for Integrated Studies, the National High Magnetic Field Lab, superconductivity centers, advanced free electron lasers, supercritical fluids. So there is a broad base of basic science, basic engineering, coupled with our primary areas of, you know, weapons, stockpile stewardship, global security, and our open collaborative research front. It's an incredibly diverse institution.
And I'm sure you partner with some of the other institutions as well?
Oh, yes, quite a bit.
I mean, the labs, obviously.
Right. Our nearest neighbors, Sandia in Albuquerque and Lawrence Livermore in California, are probably most day-to-day partners, but we also have ongoing relationships with Pacific Northwest, Argonne, Oak Ridge National Laboratory. But a lot of research gets done in collaboration because each of the laboratories has expertise that, you know, really can't be replicated anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about, I think, about the labs is they do such specific types of work, but they can also lean on each other to take it to the next level in many ways. Let me talk about you, the CIO. How do you support the mission of the lab? Because, as you said, very broad, but very focused on certain areas, or, as you mentioned, nuclear weapons complex, but also still many other things as well.
My office is responsible for the vision and strategy of information technology across the lab. So we have the budget and manage the prioritization for all of the internal core IT services. I do not have purview over the high-performance computing, the specialized experimental systems, but you know, I have the business core, the networks, the nuts and bolts that keep us all running. And my office also has policy, governance, federal reporting, and responsibility for cybersecurity. When you boil it down, I believe my office's primary job is to understand the lab's diverse mission requirements and align IT and make sure that we have effective, cost-effective systems in place so that the lab can get its job done.
How difficult is that? Because you are must be expected to make sure your network not only is up and it works and you have plenty of storage and all those things that every CIO does, but you're also working on such high-level type of work. That does that put more pressure on you as the CIO to make sure that you have even more bandwidth, for instance, or even more network connectivity?
Well, we do have a lot of very high-profile activities, and it means availability is very key. But I think any CIO that, you know, where the IT underpinning is responsible for generating on the bottom line, I think the pressures probably aren't that different from any other, you know, $3 billion R&D company.
Do you also find, though, working with scientists and engineers, that makes your job a little more complicated, too, because they kind of have an idea of what needs to be done or how something needs to be done? And does that kind of flow down or flow up to you?
This is such a diverse, erudite environment. It's one of the best aspects of working at LANL. It is wonderful always having the breadth and depth of talent at hand, no matter what the topic. The downside is, of course, they always know a better way to do it. Of course, it may be infinitely expensive. They really don't want to have to be aware of the federal regulations and those types of things. But all in all, I would much rather be surrounded by this level of education and innovation. The pros way outweigh the cons on that one.
All right. Well, that's a good thing, because otherwise it makes you, I imagine, make your job a lot more difficult. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about your office. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Now, Tom, before break, we talked a lot about the mission of your lab, how you as the CIO supports that mission. Let's talk about your office a little bit. How many employees do you have? What's your IT budget? Give me a sense of that makeup.
The lab is very large. We have over 10,000 staff. We are spread over 40 square miles of very rough northern New Mexico terrain, and we work on everything from highly classified projects to open international collaborative research. The IT execution arm has roughly 700 staff that provide the support all across the complex here. And my office, though, is actually quite small. We execute the programmatic direction for the lab-wide IT, but we do not do the hands-on staff work. So we're like a program office. We have strategy, budget, metrics, that type of thing. So we are a very, very small office. As to the budget, I'd rather not be too explicit, but it is north of $100 million per year.
All right, and there's a little bit of money there. It's always nice to have a little bit of money, hopefully. But let me step back. So the IT execution arm is 700, but your office, as you said, is fairly small. Do those 700 people who maybe keep the network up and running, if you have a help desk problem, come out and fix your computer if you need be, and do other things, do they also work under you, or do they have a separate office that they work out of?
No, they have a separate line organization. This management structure you don't see a whole lot in the outside of the government sector, but in the government sector, it's fairly common. It's kind of a tension by design model. So the strategy can be formulated and the budget be allocated based on activities, and then a service level agreement type description of the work is negotiated with the service organization. And it causes tension because it's my job to ensure that all of the IT that we deliver is aligned with the mission of the laboratory, and I can do this without having to worry about staffing, staff makeup, those types of things. It's an interesting model.
Okay, very interesting, and obviously it works. Let's talk about some of your priorities over the next 6 or 9 months. What are you looking to accomplish?
Wow, a lot. We're preparing to participate with the DOE and NNSA in their cloud initiative, and that's probably the overarching. A lot of the things that we're doing are pieced in under that. The NNSA and DOE have quite an impressive vision, and they're moving their federal employees to the cloud now, with data remaining local in the hands of the federal employees and the services actually being pushed out to the cloud as a first step. We're moving out to support that. We have a very large infrastructure on demand suite that we are very, very proud of. It's actually won several awards here recently. So that is the infrastructure that we are running all of our internal virtualized services on, and now we're looking to see how we can make that available, since it was developed by the U.S. government. It's a government-owned technology. How we can use that to help DOE and NNSA be successful in that provisioning layer as move their services out to the cloud as well. Other things on my list, we are consolidating our Exchange Collaboration Suite, which is a pretty big undertaking for us. We have been a decentralized model for many, many years, so this is a large cultural change as well as a great efficiency change for us. And something that you'll probably find a great deal of humor in, we are just now rolling out wireless technology at the laboratory. Because of our weapons heritage and all of the classified work that was done here, we have not been allowed to have wireless up here within our operating environment. So over the summer, the IT arm wired up over 50 new buildings, and so we are rapidly moving into the wireless world and everything that brings with it. Probably the priority that's nearest and dearest to my heart, I'm a network guy at the core, is we're in the midst of a network redesign, rolling out ICAM RBAC model to help us segment, separate, and manage our data better. It's kind of my top 4 or 5 for this coming year.
All right, so you got a lot going on. Is the infrastructure on demand? You said it's won several awards recently. Mm-hmm. What kind of infrastructure are we talking about? Are we talking about like storage and web hosting or what?
This is actually the underlying base layer. So this is the hardware, operating system, storage, everything transparent. The way it works here at Los Alamos, if you're an authenticated user, you go to the infrastructure on demand website, and you self-provision, you put in, you know, your unique LANL number, you put in your charge code, then you tell it that you need this much CPU, this much memory, this much storage, bam, it's hooked into the financial system, and so that all of the arcanaries of DOE budgeting are taken care of, and now you have an interface into an extra client, a server, a small cluster. And it's all just provisioned automatically for you. So basically, it's that underpinning infrastructure, so you don't have to worry about buying the hardware. You can tell it what operating system you want on it. Well, we support Windows and a small variant of Linux, no Macs yet.
And what you're trying to do, obviously, is say, okay, here, this works for us. How could this work for more broadly with other DOE and NNSA employees?
Exactly.
And where are you with that? Is that just at the very beginning stages, or have you already had some conversations and are figuring out a strategy?
We have just had conversations. There's nobody's made any commitments anyway. Of course, we would like to see the technology used more broadly and adopted, and we really want to see this federal cloud initiative be successful. I think it is a very important step in the technology evolution, and we're clearly preparing to move there as fast as we can, as we do the risk reward trade-off of, you know, putting your information out there in somebody else's hands. But this is a key piece that's been put together that there really is no competitor in the marketplace. I'm sure there will be in time. But right now, it's a unique packaging of services. It's very clean, very simple. And so we're hopeful that DOE or NNSA will pick that up as a part of their cloud offering.
You talk about Windows and some Linux. Are you looking at going move to Mac OS or other types of other flavors of operating systems?
Well, I know we will be expanding out to other Unix and Linux platforms. It'll depend. Right now, we haven't had enough requirement and not enough demand here. You know, Macs don't have a great history of virtualization. Most people that have Macs, you know, have them under their desk or carry them around with them. So we're trying to prioritize our resources to deliver where the need is the greatest. And at least for us as an institution, that's the next big steps are going to be out in the Linux Unix world.
And the other thing that you talked about from a cloud standpoint was the consolidating your Exchange collaboration suite. Now, is that also through the cloud, or is that just taking, you know, 4, 5, 10 different versions of collaboration software and coming down to one version for everybody?
Yeah, this is us coming down to one. It does run on exactly the same virtualized infrastructure that Infrastructure on Demand provides. But for us, unifying our communications, collaboration, all into to one place is a very, very large step. And for us, before we can realistically consider moving something transactional like our email out to the web, we have to get it consolidated and managed as a service first before it really makes sense for us to evaluate, you know, the external service providers.
Roughly how many different collaboration suites do you have running?
Oh, collaboration suites. We're down to 4 or 5. Two major mail platforms, 4 or 5 collaboration suites. But when we get this all tied together with the Microsoft link and roll it into our voice over IP offering, it'll be a very nice package.
Now, what's the timeline on that? Do you think that's something that's going to get done in 2012? Or
yeah, we've been working on it. We're scheduled to deliver in February of 2012.
All right. So that's going to be a nice little change for everyone. As you said, the biggest thing is the culture change. People are going to lose their favorite. Hey, this is different than what I used to have. Are you working that change management aspect right now?
Yes, that is one of our big communications issues right now. We have a hardcore dedicated base of Eudora users. I don't think Eudora has even been supported as a product for the last 4 or 5 years, but we've got a lot of people that are not happy that they're going to have to move to a different mail client. But, you know, change is never easy anywhere, and we will manage our way through it.
I'm not even sure what Eudora is.
Well, that's a very good sign. You've kept up with the technology.
A little bit, yeah. On the other flip side of this, the wireless piece, as you said, you guys just implemented wireless across the complex, 50 new buildings. Let's start with, obviously, the reason why it took so long to get there was cyber-related, but what made you feel more confident that you could roll out wireless now?
Well, in the past, across the NNSA weapons complex, wireless has not been allowed by the federal regulations that govern us. They just did not want it. You know, it was deemed to be to introduce too much risk and not provide enough value. Now that the technology is mature, the federal people making the oversight regulations are they see the value of having mobility. The times have changed. They've changed their stance, allowed us, and we have rolled out wireless. Now we're working on the next step, in partnership with our federal oversight, trying to understand where does it make sense to have this in classified environments, you know, where you want to have unclassified information, can it be wireless? And we're even looking into, and the Savannah River plant actually has the lead on this, how do we move into doing classified information movement over wireless devices? So we were a little bit late to the game, but we are really charging ahead.
What was the reaction of the employees once you said wireless is now available? Was it a big cheer? Did they even notice?
Oh, yeah. It was a very, very well-received initiative, you know, especially having it in the cafeteria and the open research, you know, places where people would expect to have it. You know, if you go to any college campus or any Starbucks these days, you know, you expect to have an internet-facing hotel-type wireless network. Now, we have them at the Defense Complex National Labs as well.
One thing occurs to me, and I just be a kind of an interesting question, how many times have you had to go out and shut down wireless networks that were set up by researchers and scientists on their own?
Well, let's put it this way. We have had to have deployed sensor networks to detect them because they were coming on so frequently that we felt we had to have persistent monitoring so that we could detect them, find them, and go and turn them off.
That, my friend, is probably one part of the job you will not miss.
Oh, no. Definitely not having to spend the money on that system anymore is a big win for me.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about another big issue, cybersecurity. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Now, Tom, before break, we talked a little bit about your priorities, the big wireless network that you guys finally set up, and that you have to stop going out and shutting down the ones that weren't allowed previously. But all that relates back to cybersecurity. And cybersecurity is something that Los Alamos has had some issues with over the last several years. You've been in the press quite a bit. Talk about where you've improved your cybersecurity and how have you gone about to make those improvements?
Well, we have changed our cybersecurity posture drastically here over each of the last several years. And I'm not going to go into huge details for obvious reasons, but some of the big things we did, we started with the people. We recruited and built just an outstanding team of cybersecurity professionals. We have both our very, very strong cyber-oriented research component. We have a world-class incident response and management effort. We've invested very heavily into tools, training. We have changed the philosophy of our IT, and now information security is really baked throughout everything that we do. So there is no longer any question of, oh, can we have clear text passwords? Oh, you know, that everybody really now, we've changed the culture of this laboratory to understand the importance of cybersecurity. We've seen the downside of it being in the, you know, the Washington Post, and though that type of press definitely gets senior management's attention, and has really let us move in a very positive way to much more of an embracing and understanding of the needs for appropriate cyber controls. So we really have made heavy investments in staff, tools, sensors, engineering efforts. Our effort is to just continue making LANL a harder target for the bad guys.
Obviously, this gets into the sensitivities, but how much pressure do you see? How much attempts do you see to break into your network? I mean, is it any different than what DOD faces or other agencies?
We trade information with all of the major DOE entities and also a lot of the institution in the defense industrial base and across academia. But Los Alamos seems to have a rather unique target painted on us. And I would say, you know, everybody sees hundreds of thousands of scans and malicious attempts, you know, the kind of the ankle biter stuff every day. But the last several events that we have been very well thought out, very well researched, spear phishing attacks targeted to individuals with 0-day exploits. You know, the types of things that are very, very difficult to defend against. And our strategy is rapid detection, stop lateral movement, you know, rapid containment and cleanup, because we do not believe that we can build a defensive wall that will keep everybody out. You know, we have to operate on the premise that a sufficiently motivated bad actor can get into our unclassified systems at any time. Therefore, we're constantly on that war footing.
I think one of the things that you hear time and again from CIOs, and especially the ones I talk to about cyber, will tell you that same thing. We can't necessarily keep the bad guys out. The only way to do that is to unplug ourselves from the rest of the world, which is just not realistic. But you got to limit the harm or improve the ability for you guys to detect problems before they blow up in your face.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something you're seeing often. Cyber is getting better, but one of the things, because of cyber, you also were slow to move to wireless. What about mobile technology? Is that also being slowed down a little bit by the fear or the concerns around cybersecurity?
That has been part of the slowdown. Right now, we're in early stages. We only have one type of, you know, certified device. We're currently using BlackBerries. But, you know, that's a very important step. It's helped us learn how to manage the mobile devices. Our roadmap, we are clearly seeing that in 3 to 5 years that we hope to be in a very mobile, device-agnostic environment. In our re-architecting of our core, our plan is to protect the data and step away from, you know, with the explosion of end devices out there, we have to step away from figuring out how to protect, you know, all of these different types of Android, iPad, iPhone, all of these different devices. We just don't see that paradigm is going to work for us. And our workforce expects the same type of computing connectivity and mobility that they have at home here in their office. So this is causing quite a change in the way we think about IT, the way we authorize people, the way we protect data. And it's going to be a very, very exciting time. Lots of institutions are strapping on exactly these same problems. So we are not a leader in this space. But now that the doors have been opened, we're trying to move forward as fast as we can.
All right, very important. All right. Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, let me ask you a little bit about yourself. How long have you been CIO at the Los Alamos National Lab, and where else have you worked before you came to the lab?
Gee, wow. I just passed the four-year mark, so been here for 4 years. See, I've worked a lot of places. Pacific Northwest National Lab, networking, distributed systems, operated the supercomputing center. So yeah, I did 3 years of hard time as a federal employee. I stood up the cyber counterintelligence program for the Department of Energy. See, from there I went to Idaho National Laboratory. I was the director of critical infrastructure protection for them. So there's been a very strong core of IT and cybersecurity through my entire career. But this is my first chance to strap on the CIO role.
Very nice. And now, if I ask you which lab did you like best, is that going to be a tough question to answer?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to answer that one. They're all wonderful, but they're all very unique.
All right, and I figured you'd just tell me Los Alamos since they currently pay you, so I'll give you the other one. All right, well, Tom, thank you very much for your time. We are unfortunately out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Tom Harper, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Chief Information Officer. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Howard Schmidt is the White House cyber coordinator.
Department of Homeland Security, working with the various departments and agencies, do this thing called CyberStats, which basically is a more technical deep dive. That in turn is translated into this report that goes to the senior leadership of the departments and agencies, so they then can look at the allocation of resources, so they can make sure that the correct emphasis put on the cyber things that they care about.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.